Podcast Talk by Gamma, keeping you connected and protected.
Welcome to DAS Talk, the essential podcast on distributed antenna systems and in-building communication. Hosted by Peter, VP of Gamma, and Philip Nicholas. This Gamma Electronics series focuses on emergency response and safety. Join us as we navigate the challenges of building effective communication systems for North America's first responders. We delve into the advancements in emergency responder radio systems and the transformative impact on new technologies. Tune in for insightful discussions aimed at increasing knowledge and awareness in the DAS field. Whether you're a professional or an enthusiast, DAS Talk is your gateway to understanding the nexus of technology, safety, and communication.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of DAS Talk. We have my co-host, Peter, Vice President of Gamma, and we have Travis, Deputy Fire Marshal over at Concord. So what we're going to do now is, Peter, let's get into it.
All right. Sounds good. So first of all, Travis, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Phil, for the introduction. I appreciate that very much. I'm going to just do a brief intro on Travis here. He's the Deputy Fire Marshal of New Construction for the City of Concord, North Carolina, a booming area, an area that's got a lot of growth going on. They're trying to deal and kind of manage that growth. He specializes in the fire life and safety of firemen. He has extensive experience in new and existing construction plan review, including sprinkler, fire alarm, and ERCs or ERCs systems here. So being the deputy fire marshal, man, that's an awesome title. Okay. Tell me what you're doing there. What exactly you do in that role?
Well, as you mentioned, Concord, where I'm at, we're right outside of Charlotte, probably by about 15 minutes. That's probably the best reference point if you're not a North Carolina native. We are booming. We can't keep up, so to speak. But my staff, we're a smaller section of the fire marshal's office here in Concord. And me, one other full-timer and a part-timer are responsible for all the projects we've got going right now. And we handle everything from reviewing the plans to doing the acceptance tests to, you know, walking with the building code officials from our jurisdiction, or not our jurisdiction, but from our area as well. So our job is to coordinate and make the customer experience as smooth as possible when it comes to building here in our beautiful city. Mm.
So you've got three guys and basically two and a half, right?
Right.
Do you find it kind of daunting on how much work you've got on your plate right now?
At times, yes. But I have 100% faith in the guys that work on my side with me. Our part-timer, he's a retired fire marshal from Connecticut. So he has decades of experience that's a blessing for us to be able to draw from it. The other guy that works for me, he's my main field inspector. He's got many years of experience and is accustomed to more complex type of inspections that we typically find here on the new construction side. But with what we've got going on, we've got one major complex going on right now that they're looking at being up and running in the first quarter of next year. And they just started less than a year ago. So, I mean, they're moving and we're getting to the phase now where there's more going around than we can help. In fact, sometimes it spills over to our existing construction guys to help out on some of the inspections and such. But we keep moving a lot, but we have fun doing it.
So this new complex, what kind of building is it? Curious. Tell me a little bit.
To be construction. There's a lot of concrete, a lot of steel, and a lot of massive infrastructure. It's going to be a pharmaceutical facility. There is a huge amount of infrastructure going in, whether it be data, electrical, plumbing, everything is just over the top. And I in my time here in Concord, I've never seen anything to this level. We're very excited to have it come online, but at the same time, we're doing the best we can to make sure it's done right. And, that's just, a thumbnail sketch of what's been going on here in Concord over the last probably 10 years. We have several other very large companies that are looking at land around here and expanding. We're doing warehouses, you know, one right after the other. We've done millions and millions and millions of square feet of spec space and, you know, tilt wall construction. We deal with just about everything here. In fact, one time I was in a class and they were asking about who's inspected this, who's got that in their jurisdiction. We're one of the few places that can say we have industrial, we have NASCAR, we have indoor skydiving, you name it, we've got it. And we're very diverse in what we have to look at. So we're learning every day about new stuff. So, yeah, but this industrial complex has taught us a lot and we're just learning as we go with it.
Sounds like a lot of a fun place to live. Actually,
it is.
Sounds like a really cool place to go and fun place to live. You got a lot going on, a lot of industry moving in and a lot of building going on. And that leads us to kind of some of the things that we do here at DasTalk and buildings and structures and components and how that relates to the fire. It's interesting how the fire department's kind of like chosen, even though they don't necessarily use the systems that we talk about most, which are the DAS systems or ERCEs or ERC systems that go into the buildings to kind of help protect and help fire, EMS, and law enforcement all communicate, right? But fire has been chosen to be the guys who do the inspections, right? They're the ones, right? But they don't, I mean, EMS probably use it the most, maybe, and then maybe law enforcement and fire is probably the least. If EMS is considered part of fire, well, then that would be part of that. But even still, it's fire guys are the ones who do all the inspections and the code enforcement and stuff like that. So you talked about some projects you're working on right now. How do what you guys do? I mean, I know that, but how do what you guys do relate to, well, let's do this. I'm a fireman. I got a radio and I'm walking into a building. I go into a building and I'm having some major problems communicating back with the town, with home base. Okay. And I can hear them, but they can't hear me. Why is that so important to firemen that we can resolve that issue?
Pretty easy to answer that. It's life or death. Typically, when a firefighter goes in, it's one of two reasons. Either you're going in to do like a pre-plan or code enforcement, you know, a non-emergency visit, mm-hmm. or you're there for an emergency visit. It's either all or nothing typically.
Yeah.
And when you're there for an urgent reason, it's important that you are able to communicate not only with the other firefighters that may be on scene there with you, but incoming companies, back to our communications. You know, everything is important because sizing up the building, understanding what's inside, understanding causation of the fire, what the conditions are, what the needs are. If we're not able to communicate that back, we're pretty ineffectual at our job.
Because there's got to be the quarterback, right? Now, what I mean by the quarterback of the team, and he's communicating on the radio, right? I mean, he's telling people where to go and what to do. I'm not a fireman, so I don't know how that works, but that line of communication is absolutely critical, like you're saying, right? So help me understand how that exactly works. So they're going to come up, they're going to assess the situation, and who's going to do that and who's leading the way?
So the way we work here in Concord, I can speak for that. You know, everybody may have a different, you know, protocol they use, but typically with us here, if it's a fire call going out for a structure fire, commercial fire, whatever, we have a specific response. A certain number of trucks will respond depending on what it is. And when they get there, then they automatically start securing water. One will begin doing investigation and size up, trying to determine, you know, is it really a working fire or is it just something else? And if it winds up being a working fire, sometimes even before a battalion chief gets on scene, you know, we've got guys that are going in, starting fire attack, different things like that. So typically you're going to have the first arriving, which are the ones that are going to be sizing it up initially, figuring out what's going on, how intensive the situation is. And at some point you'll have, you know, the the battalion chiefs will show up, or the folks that will ultimately take command. But even before they take command, you have folks that are figuring out what's going on. Then they'll transfer their information to whoever will be incident command, typically a battalion chief. And then at that point, the battalion chief becomes the one that's kind of like the conductor of the orchestra. He's the one that'll take over at that point and determine what additional resources might be needed. Where are the guys at? What are they doing? What do they need inside? Do we have enough water? And then that's where they start working out. So it'll go from an initial, an initial response, and then typically it'll transfer over to a more centralized incident command at that point. And radio so community.
The battalion chief's the guy then who's sort of making the calls and the shots.
Yep.
On site, right? Based upon information gathered maybe yep. from other his other team members. And if it's a big fire in maybe multiple locations, or a big fire where you got to come at different angles with different trucks, then right. someone's got to be coordinating that, and it becomes an enormous project that could take hours and hours, mm-hmm. sometimes even days, right? To kind of put these things out.
Yeah, and the radio is the backbone of all of that. If it doesn't work, then we have very limited success unless we try to figure out another way to do it.
Sure. I think of a small fire. This is a small one I'll tell you about just briefly. But I had a tenant who actually lit my condo on fire, and it was a two-story fire. Okay. But the amount of work it took to put it out kind of blows you away at what goes into it, right? So part of it, they had to chainsaw holes in the roof in multiple locations. And you've got a team of guys up on the roof. And this is just one fire in one condo. There were 20 units in the building, right? Mm-hmm. So you had guys who were down below who were hitting the fire with a hose. You had guys up on top who were hitting with the hose. And then you've got your team who's cutting things open and also finding the water, because of course one of the fire hydrants that was close wasn't working, right? So then they had to bring in the truck. And the fire hydrant wasn't working. And it took, I'd say about 3-4 hours for one fire in one room to put that out. And I was sitting back thinking about the coordination involved in that. I'm like, man, that's critical. So when you talk about that, you know, not being able to communicate within buildings, I get what you're saying when you say it's life or death. It's no doubt. Because you've got to be able to know who's going to do what and when they're going to do it and when they're going to show up with what and getting out. Right. I mean, if you need to get out, yep. you've got to be able to get out too. You got to know where the danger is.
Exactly. And you have to, and sometimes we'll have a safety officer that'll be posted outside if he sees conditions deteriorating to where the structure may be, you know, in danger of collapse or something. For example, he's got to get that information, not only to the battalion chief or whoever's in incident command, but it has to get back to all of the firefighters that are inside or that are close enough that could be in danger themselves from a collapse or anything like that. It's important that you have data going in and coming out both, because, you know, one person might have to notify 20 other people about something he sees or vice versa. So being able to feed that information around is extremely important.
Man, you nailed it. A lot of critical points there. So in your perspective, then, where is the disconnect as far as, like, I mean, most first responders, they know they have a radio, but if it doesn't work, in your opinion, what's typically the issue that's causing that from the team members that you've talked to?
So do you mean for, like, what do they not understand, that there might be a DAS in play or
say it's working, right?
And, gotcha.
And
right.
All of a sudden they're moving around. They're starting to assess the situation. They're out there. And then in certain parts of the building, it's not working. Gotcha. They don't understand why. So they, a lot of times it's what we call as the uplink ends up being the problem. Right? The uplink, they can't talk back. They can hear, but they can't talk back.
So, right? That's interesting. I was doing a walkthrough of a construction site a while back with a large number of our firefighters. They were wanting to kind of see how things were going to, you know, build out before the project was complete. And one of them made a comment about a specific area that he was concerned about. Hey, you know, if this happens, I don't think we're going to get radio, you know, traffic to be able to come out of here, and we won't be able to hear each other. Then you heard another one say, well, we could go point to point if we needed to. And they had already started working out the strategy for how they would address it. I hadn't even mentioned the radio, you know, amplification or relay system. We haven't even got to that. Mm. But the firefighters were already planning ahead because they know when you get into the bowels of certain hotels here, your radio doesn't work. They know if you get in certain parts of our hospital, it could be kind of sketchy. They understand that. And to their praise, they're able to have a plan. But now, you know, since the code changes have made, you know, the DAS systems more important and required in new structures, a lot of times they don't realize that those systems are necessarily in place, but we try to educate them as best we can. Hey, this school, guess what? It has a radio system that can help you out. Oh, this part of the hospital, we just added a system. So what happens is they're beginning to learn, but on the upside, they've already planned out contingencies for how they would handle it if there was a failure and they didn't even realize that they were planning ahead.
So I never really thought of it that way because what you're saying is like, so because you've got some buildings that have IRC systems put in them, right? And these are new right. buildings, probably newer construction, but correct. You've got a lot of old construction. When was Concord, you know, when was it, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, developed or started?
1796, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, we've been around a little bit.
Okay.
But most of our oldest buildings are probably mid to late 1800s for some of the big textile mills we have here.
Okay.
And we have people rehabbing these old ancient mm-hmm. buildings, not ancient, but rehabbing the buildings and making apartment complexes out of what might've been a hotel at one point or whatever.
Sure.
And so they've been around this type of construction so long, they've already come up with a game plan for how to handle it. But when it's new construction, we just try to give them the tools to not have to worry so much about that.
And that's what we're kind of hammering, right? So
exactly.
So they've got to acclimate how they're going to go into these buildings based upon the date, basically the date of when it's built, right? So if it's an older building, they know that, man, if I get down low or down low, I'm in their parking lot down low, or I'm in the back of the building where I've got layers and layers of what I would say construction materials that are blocking RF signal from coming in, whether it's a particular type of glass called low E glass, a lot of steel, a lot of concrete blocking that signal. And they know that if they get back in that area, they're not going to be able to communicate. They got to have a different kind of plan on how they're going to manage this, an emergency.
Exactly.
And that's a little crazy. I mean, in my mind, that's a little crazy because now you almost have to know the city so well. Your battalion commanders, they got to know the city so well that they got to know what they're dealing with when they show up. You got to know it. Otherwise, it's you can have a big, big problem, right? You have guys left behind, guys not knowing what they're doing. You know, they always say, like, in military tactics, the best way to defeat your enemy is to stop their communications, right? So in this instance, you know, the building itself could actually kind of be the enemy because it's stopping our communication, right? So that kind of, you know, makes me think, well, maybe, just maybe, it might be prudent to enforce code on older buildings at one point in time. Because I know you're doing new construction, but old buildings, I know in other regions around the country, they've actually started asking older buildings that by certain timelines, you've got to have DAS systems put in, IRC's DAS systems put in, right? And I know it's an onerous on the building owner, but on another note, it really is a safety issue for first responders when they go in.
And, yeah, for sure. And, you know, we have some existing and older facilities that have retrofitted with those systems.
Oh, really?
Long before it was in the code.
Okay.
Our local hospital, that, you know, they extended a system for an addition they did quite a few years ago, not required by code, but they saw the value in it.
So they were willing to do it.
Yeah. Right. And we had a couple hotels like that too. They saw the value in it. Yeah. And they were willing to do it. But I think if you start going back to a lot of these places and say, hey, you guys need to put it in, I think there would be a lot more pushback. But those are conversations, you know, in our municipality we haven't had yet with the public. But we see the value in it. And me as a plan reviewer and new construction guy, if I have the chance to talk to somebody, particularly if they're doing like a massive upfit or overhaul of an old mill or something like that, I'll always throw it out there. It's like, hey, not code, but here's a really strong suggestion. And, you know, I try to educate as I go. And sometimes when you appeal to people and let them understand the importance of why we do it and why these things have value, a lot of times you'd be surprised at how positive they can respond to that, whether it be a radio system or even a sprinkler system or any type of fire protection.
Sure. Well, because if they understand these systems, right, if you plan for it from the get-go, as far as cost factors involved, it is much, much, much more cost-effective to plan it from the get-go and design them in. So design it when you build it, or not after the fact, in other words. So you don't want to have to put one in later and put up new construction. And then, oh, by the way, where's your DAS system? Where is it? They get posed with that issue. It costs them a lot more versus designing it and building it in when they're building the system, building the building. Or on that same note, if they're doing a big retrofit, while you're doing it, you almost might as well design it in and build it into the building. Versus, well, maybe in 5 years from now or 10 years from now, they're going to start requiring them to go into, in other words, the grandfather clause that they don't have to have them. That may end up changing because they're just maybe so much of a demand to say, you know what, this is really just the right thing to do. We need to make sure our guys can talk. And if they can't talk in a building, having new people come in and them having to plan every single time a different plan of attack for a different building because some have them and some don't. You know, is rather complex and a very difficult thing to do. And it's kind of tough on a team of firemen or a team of any first responders for that matter to go in there and do that. I mean, you think about how it compounds the issue with law enforcement going in there on campuses. If it's a very old campus and there's no IRC's DAS system installed, you've got live shooting incidences that can happen. And how do you coordinate that if their radios are being blocked from one building to the next and trying to figure out where he is and what he's doing or whatever the issue may be? So this issue is it's not a simple one to fix because you've got a lot of, especially in older communities, a lot going on before. And now it's like, well, we're only going to work on the new stuff, which is what most people.
Well, I know like here in Concord in Cabarrus County where we are, they just did a significant addition in renovation to our courthouse here, and our sheriff's department. Of course, they're the ones that are going to use it every day, 24 hours a day. So we worked with them. I mean, we all share the same frequencies. We're all on the same network, so to speak. Okay. And we worked very closely with them. And when we walked through to do our acceptance and things like that, we had a sheriff's deputy walking with us, one who was in their communication side. We even had one of our PD officers here in Concord walk with us, because at the end of the day, if it goes bad, you know, there will be multiple agencies using stuff. And when we get to a situation like that, where it's definitely a high risk type of situation, we will involve the other municipalities, even though, you know, the sheriff's department does not review plans like we do. Well, the decisions I make will affect them as well. So we try to get people included, particularly when it gets to that type of a situation. And we always try to let contractors know up front, hey, our radios are going to have to work when we get to the end, because unlike sprinkler and fire alarm, you can't always plan ahead for the radio permeation and effects. You always know what a sprinkler system is going to do. You know what a fire alarm is supposed to do. But it may not be till the 11th hour that you realize, oh, wait, we got an area that doesn't have radio permeation. So we have those conversations very early on when it comes time to do that. In fact, in our initial packet that goes out to new construction projects, it's in the top 10 items that we mentioned on there.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I certainly can see the value of the importance of it, but I'm not so sure that, you know, first of all, you know, the general public, most of them really don't know much about this. I talk to my friends about what I do and what industry I'm in, and they just kind of drop their jaw and they're like, okay, they don't know. And I would probably say if you jump up into, you know, even most first responders don't realize, well, how and why their radios do or don't work inside buildings. What do you think is like one of the biggest challenges that you face in your region right now with communication, ERSI's communications and some of the issues you're facing now?
So I see basically two different areas that need to be addressed. And one of them we've been talking about is firefighters understanding what these systems are. Hey, did you know there's one in place at West Cabarrus High School? Oh, there is? Yeah. So letting firefighters understand where they're at, understand what they do, and how to deal with them if they malfunction, if they're not doing what they're supposed to. Education of the firefighters about that. That's one key thing.
Okay.
But the other direction is more toward the installer side. The folks that install the systems that provide the hardware and the setup and all that. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, radio stuff is brand new. When you look at it in the stream of time from the code perspective, we've had sprinklers forever. We've had fire alarms forever. This radio stuff is new, as some people will say. And what we'll find a lot of times, you'll have experienced companies that have installed fire alarms for years, for example. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, wait, hey, I can make some money doing radio stuff maybe. And then they'll see it as, oh, well, I can send a guy to a class for 2 days. He can get a certification or a piece of paper that says he knows something. And then they'll come and they'll sell it to whoever the building owner is or whatever. And then at the end of the day, it winds up being a mess when we come in and try to test, and it's not doing what it's supposed to. It's not set up correctly. And then they wind up wasting a lot of time and a lot of money trying to make it right. So I've never met any BDA installers that had bad intent. And that makes me happy to see that. They all genuinely want to do the right thing, but I think sometimes they aren't experienced enough to know what to do in some cases. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but we want folks to understand if you're installing here, it needs to work and we're going to test it. And, you know, we learn all the time. We learn from guys like y'all. We learn from the installers because I don't know everything about radio systems and I doubt I ever will. I'm not that smart. But at the same time, they can learn from us that, you know, hey, this is our expectation. This is how you need to submit. These are the outcomes we expect to see. And, you know, it's kind of a two-way street. But I think because of how new the standards are, a lot of installers are getting into it, not realizing how profoundly complicated it can be.
So you bring something up, and that is actually a kind of a reoccurring problem. Not just in Concord, from what I've seen. I think it's a problem everywhere because the code is new and it's not just new, but it's also newly being enforced in municipalities and jurisdictions that didn't even really realize it was on the books, right? So they're kind of one of the goals at Safer Building Coalition, which we're a big part of, is to help installers understand that there are resources. There are a lot of resources that can help them learn more about that. And so one of those is NICET certification, which can kind of, there's a NICET 1, which brings them to a basic, you know, I'm going to pull cable, put antennas in level, and a NICET 2, where they can sort of oversee that. And then the third part of it would be a NICET 3rd level of certification. And then they would be sort of a commissioning agent who would be able to do that. So the more that we can not just talk about the importance of competency, I think, on what you're hitting on, is to maybe even look at requiring these certifications in order to install. That's been done in other places where they'll say, you know what? A lot of the AHJs are saying, if you're going to install in my jurisdiction, you have to have a certain level of competency. And the NICET certifications, which are designed for public safety ERSI's installs, will help alleviate that kind of gap. Because I think you're right, a 2-day class is certainly insufficient. And I've been doing this a while, and I'm learning and learning and learning as I go. And the people I talk to, and it's like, wow, near-far effect, which is interesting. So you could have a system where, like you're talking about, like where you just get on a radio and it seems like it's working fine, right? Well, if you've got one radio communicator in one part of the building, and then he jumps on another spot, you're actually kind of using more and more bandwidth. And the more you have on, the more power they need for the uplink. But then the system needs to adjust for that. It doesn't always adjust for that. So to be able to test properly is critical. Testing and understanding installing. I mean, you're hitting it right on. I get exactly what you're saying there. Let's see. So if there's a first responder and he goes into a building and he's having, you know, real problems communicating, how should he address that? Who should he talk to in Concord? What is he getting? Is it an issue that they're not bringing up the fact that they're having communication problems? Maybe you don't know about all the buildings that are not working right. Or maybe that building is supposed to. What is he supposed to do? Who's he supposed to tell? Hey, I got a problem with this building.
So it can go a couple different directions. If it was an emergency situation, they show up at 2 o'clock in the morning and radios didn't work or whatever the case is, typically they'll work through the situation. Like I said, they plan to do that.
Yeah.
But on the backside, maybe the next morning or next shift, whatever, they'll send an email to me or, to my boss and say, hey, we were at this school. And I keep going back to the school example. You know, they had a system, supposedly it's not working. Or, hey, I was looking at the fire alarm panel and we were getting this code that said, donor antenna failure. I'm not quite sure what that means. Can you help us? So they come to us to figure it out sometimes. I've also known that they've talked to communications before because we have our own radio shop here in Concord. And those guys are really sharp. And, you know, sometimes it's one of those where if it looks like it's one of those where the system's not working properly, then we'll send out an inspector to go kind of follow up on it and see if the system's working properly or, you know, what the situation is. And then we determine if it's a training issue or if it's, a system issue. We've actually had places here in Concord before that do have BDAs. They had no idea what it was because the business was bought and sold. And they had no idea what that red box was hanging on the wall. I see the fire alarm control panel, but I don't know what this other thing is. And it's just a matter of going back and educating. And, you know, whether it be our guys need education or the building owner needs education or whatever, we seem to be kind of the junction box for all that to try to make it get routed the right direction.
I mean, you just brought up an interesting point about that. Like, I really think that. So you've got building owners who don't even know that they have systems put in. Well, if they don't know that they're put in, how on earth are they going to maintain them properly?
Yeah, that's a great.
I mean, how do I know? I bought a building. I didn't know there was a system in there.
So what seems to be the case here, and I can only speak for my municipality, we're ISO class one, which means that we do annual fire inspections for everything. That's our goal, is to be in every building at least once a year. Mm-hmm. And when our guys go in, if there's a BDA system, then they ask to see the certification paperwork, just like you do for your sprinkler or your fire alarm. Yep. We want, is it working? Let us see the paperwork. And if it comes back and they don't have the paperwork or paperwork shows a malfunction that's not been repaired, then that becomes priority for us, before we clear that out for its annual inspection, they have to get it taken care of. So, some places may not get to a place, but every 2, maybe 3 years could be more. But here we're fortunate enough to be able to be on a cycle for the most part. We're hitting just about everywhere once a year with the fire inspection. So we have identified all the places that have them. And we look for it just like we would for sprinkler, fire alarm, or any other type of life safety system.
Wow. Okay. So you have a yearly inspection that comes in. And I've, like you were saying, I've seen a lot longer time frames for sure.
Right.
So there is at least a mechanism to come in and say, okay, this system is working, or you have a system, it should be working, and show me the report that does that. And hopefully we've kind of differentiated between the guys who are installing the systems and those who are testing the systems to make sure that they're working, right? Because I have seen in some jurisdictions, it's the same party. So, and also whether or not you need one, that should be a different party as well, right? So if it's the integrator who's putting them in, because there's incentive for them to put in a system, but you should, whether or not you need one, you don't want to have to put one in if you don't need one. That's inappropriate. Right. That's a cost to the owner, which, you know, shouldn't be there. But this issue has come up. Well, you know, building owners have put in systems they didn't need to be put in, very upset after the fact they had to put one in when they were told to have to put one in. So the parties who put them in, the parties who test them need to be different parties. Integrators yes. need to be different than commissioners and from testers and inspectors and so on. Okay.
And you know, that's like with me, whether it be a radio system, fire alarm, whatever, the last thing I want to do is cost someone money that they don't need to spend. I don't ever want to cost anybody money, but you know, there is a cost for fire alarm. There is a cost for sprinklers. There is a cost for these things.
Sure.
And to the best of my knowledge, I try to transmit that reality to, you know, builders and contractors that maybe you're dealing with something in, because, you know, a small McDonald's may not need one, but when you start dealing with a million square foot warehouse, yeah, absolutely. That's a mm-hmm. reality. So we try to be as transparent in what our expectations are. Mm. And we've never really had problems with people trying to push systems that don't need it.
Don't
because,
need it.
You know, here you have to have a permit to install one. Well, that's going to come through our office. I mean, you know, we have questioned permits before, not necessarily about radio stuff, but is this really a necessary thing? If you want to do it, that's fine. But, you know, just letting you know, we can work with you on that. And having that communication is very important. And the AHJ needs to take it upon themselves to question anything that looks a little bit strange. Like I said, I don't know everything. I learn from you guys. I learn from installers every day, every time we do this. And I'm not beyond being humble enough to say, hey, I didn't know that. I need to know that, because mm-hmm. failure is part of progress. I mean, that's just kind of how it works. And that's kind of one of the weak points of this whole, you know, radio system situation we're getting into now.
Mm-hmm. So it's one of the other points you brought up before, which I thought was really interesting. So, and this might be a message that you can send to building owners, right? Is that in choosing who you're going to put in the system, make sure they're competent and certified. Right.
Right.
And I think that's one of the points that you brought up that I kind of want to touch on real quick, because that's first of all, going to make your job a lot easier, because it's going to pass with flying colors at the end when they put it in, and also save them a lot of money. Also get them a faster certificate of occupancy, which mm-hmm. is always on their mind, because if you have a building that's sitting there with no people in it or not being used, it's just a building and they're not making any money.
Yep.
They can't sell it. Right. So I think that's what I take out a lot of what you said. And unless I'm missing something there, but I think that would be really, really important to be careful about who you're choosing to do that install, because it's not, you're right. It's not a fire alarm. It's totally different. It's complicated.
And one of the things that I find to be the case, a lot of the companies that particularly, because there are certain ones that, like local companies that I deal with day in, day out, I know the installers by name, things like that for fire alarm and sprinkler. They're aware of BDA requirements. Well, if their company doesn't do it, they typically have a third party that they deal with that'll come in and do the survey and all that. And there's been more than once I've told a building owner or contractor or whatever, hey, who's doing your fire alarm? Oh, it's ABC. All right, go talk to them about the BDA factor. And the fire alarm or the, you know, the electronics companies that are handling that, if they don't do BDA themselves, typically they have somebody they trust, because they realize if they're working with a good company, they're going to have less issue with their reputation, I guess, down the road. So good companies tend to kind of pair up. And I always say, hey, whoever's doing your fire alarm, talk to them first, and maybe they can make some recommendations. And typically that has worked out positively every time we've had to go that route.
Well, I think we've hit a lot of the key topics here. Phil, did I miss anything?
No, I feel like we went through a lot. We went through everything in depth and have a better understanding now of all the issues that run on your side, on the fire side.
Awesome.
Where could we find more information on you and your city on social media?
Let's see. I'm not a social media guy, but I can point you to our city's website. It's okay. concordnc.gov. That's for our municipality here. And there's links there for the fire department, all of our Instagram, Facebook, all that fun stuff. If you go to the fire department page, to the fire marshal's office, all my contact info is right there. We're easy to find. We're a fun place to live. If you ever get a chance, come and visit. It's definitely worth it. You know, we've got everything from NASCAR to, you know, you can be to a basketball game in about 30 minutes. So,
wow.
So we're in a good place. But yeah, concordnc.gov is where you can find out all about us.
And don't you have a podcast?
Yes.
Tell us about that real quick and go ahead and plug it if you can.
I will. Me and another firefighter, Eric Stevenson, out of Carteret County, North Carolina, which is more down toward the coast. We have a podcast called All Clear, where we deal with firefighter health and wellness, everything from mental health to cancer exposure reductions. You know, we're talking about doing a radio episode before too long, because that's something that firefighters may not know. But allclearpodcast.com is where you can find us at. If you're not a firefighter, some of the episodes are still good, but it's mainly geared for those of us that are in the trade, so to speak.
Awesome. Isn't it streaming on all platforms?
All platforms. Wherever you find you guys, you'll probably find us, Spotify, Apple, you know, Tuned In, all that. You'll find us in there.
Amazing.
Awesome. Well,
thank you for your time, Deputy. We appreciate you, and thank you for being on Daz Talk.
No worries. Thank you.
Daz Talk by Gamma, keeping you connected and protected.